This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm David Lazarus, on loan from the Los Angeles Times. Well, we know the Iceman cometh, but this time of year, the Taxman does a lot of cometh-ing too, and he's coming right at us. And that's why it is always good to welcome back our friend Louis Barajas. He is a certified financial planner and author of several books, including My Street Money. Welcome back to the show, Louis.
It's a pleasure, David.
Also, on this show, we're talking about the immigrant experience. Tell me, are there any particular issues that come up tax-wise that are unique to immigrants?
Well, absolutely. There are a lot of immigrants that come to work here. They don't have working visas. And so what has to happen is that if they work here and actually earn money, they must report it, as anyone has who earns money must report their money and file tax returns. The problem is they don't have Social Security numbers, so they go do their tax return, and guess what happens? They're saying, I can't fill out your tax return. I need an individual taxpayer identification number, an ITIN number, and so they've got to get one of those before they file their tax returns.
And a lot of people are also paid in cash or under the counter. I know the IRS wants that to be declared. Is it often declared?
No, it's not often declared. Let's be realistic, but it should be declared. I mean, everybody who earns income in the United States must report their income. Do they? No. But the problem is that, again, if you're here, and especially what's going on with immigration now, and you'd like to, you know, basically have an opportunity to get the legal status, you should file your tax returns, especially if you're working as a gardener, as a maid, a caretaker. Take that money, report it, and you can actually file, you know, Schedule C, like if you were self-employed. You have to file the form W-7 to get that individual taxpayer identification number, that ITIN number. And they also have that form in Spanish. It's a W-7-SP.
If you're an undocumented worker and you pay your taxes, are you all but daring the federal government to deport you?
No. It's like a 99.99% chance they're not going to report you. They want you to, report your taxes. All the IRS cares about is that, you know, are you reporting your income and are you paying your taxes? That's all they really care about. You know, I've been doing taxes, and I've been doing taxes for immigrants as well for over 30 years, and I've never seen it happen, ever.
All right. Later on in the show, we're going to hear from Atlanta realtor Deborah Gilmore about how the housing market is doing down south. But I was talking to her earlier about an interesting tax question that came up, and I thought you might be able to weigh in. Let's give it a listen.
Very sadly, we lost our tax CPA preparer last May. We realized initially that he did a lot of his and most of his tax preparation for everybody out of his home. And our fear became that once the family, the house was closed and locked up, depending on who would be going into that house, what family member or whoever was appointed by the court or by will, how and would they dispose of the tax records and information on our CPA's computer. Looking at that situation and knowing that other people may be in the same situation, want to know what can someone do when they work with an independent tax preparer to protect themselves from possible identity theft or someone invading the privacy of their information that the CPA or person preparing the taxes may have.
That's a really interesting question because I know that medical records fall under privacy laws. What about tax records?
Well, you also have privacy policy laws, but you know, this happens often. And not only that, you'll have a lot of tax repairs during tax time. They'll have nervous breakdowns and they can't be found. And that happens more often than death. When I sit down and I'm going to be doing my taxes with an individual preparer, I'm going to ask them, what's your business continuity plan? What happens if you become disabled, get sick, have a nervous breakdown, pass away? What happens to my information? And they technically should have something in writing for you. And if they don't, and they haven't thought about it, I'd seriously think about working with someone else. Now, unfortunately, for most people, they don't really think about it until it happens. So, you're that in this situation, her information is in the hands of the estate, and she has to trust that the spouse or the kids, after a certain number of years, maybe 6 years, they'll shred those documents, and they can prove to her that they're going to shred the documents.
All right, and coming up in just a moment, Louis Barajas will take some of your calls about taxes. Stick around.
Marketplace Money is supported by the Economic Development Authority of Fairfax County, Virginia, home to creative people and creative solutions at powerofideas.org.
This is Marketplace Money from APM. We're talking taxes on the show today. Certified financial planner Luis Barajas is with me in the studio. We've got a couple of callers on the line eager to chat. First up is Bonnie calling from Tallahassee. Hiya, Bonnie.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are things in Tallahassee?
Beautiful day today.
What do you do?
I'm a stay-at-home mom, but I'm sort of also an empty nester because my kids have grown up, gone to college, and are off on their own. And, well, I'm thinking about going back to work, doing something.
Like what?
I actually went to school a couple years ago. I finished last year. I got a degree in paralegal and legal studies, and I used to be a legal secretary many years ago, and I thought I might try a step up. And I don't know if anyone will hire me. I've been a stay-at-home mom for quite a while, but we'll see. I made all A's in all my courses, so hopefully somebody will take a chance.
Well, Bonnie, I've got huge respect for anybody who is ready to roll the dice and take a chance, seek out a new opportunity. So that's great. And you know, I wish you all the best on that. What's your question for us?
Last year, I had sort of a devastating thing happen to me. On May 30th, my husband and I went out to dinner, and afterwards, we stopped at a Walmart, and I was wearing a diamond tennis bracelet that my husband had given me many years before as an anniversary present. And as we got in the car to go home, I noticed the bracelet had fallen off.
Oh.
And so we rushed back into the store and searched everywhere, and it was never found. Unfortunately, I hadn't worn it that much, and it was not insured. And so I wanted to know if there's a possibility I can deduct that as a property loss on our federal income taxes this year.
How much was this bracelet worth?
When he purchased it, it was about $4,500, and it was purchased in 1988.
Luis Barajas, what can Bonnie do?
Bonnie, this is Luis. The first thing, and Bonnie, that you can do is think about maybe not going back to work and maybe playing golf in Tallahassee. The weather's too great there. But the second thing is that, you know, a lot of people don't realize that even if they have a certain piece of jewelry and they lose it or it gets stolen, they can still kind of go through their homeowner's insurance policy and see if they can claim, get anything for it. So I don't know if you were able to do that as well.
But does that mean she would have had to itemize it at some point and let the insurer know about it?
Well, yes, but sometimes you have a certain rider on there that'll say $1,000 for insurance, and I mean for, you know, some kind of jewelry. And so you have a rider on there you might not be aware of. So you might want to go through there first. But if you don't have that, then you're going to have to file Form 4684, which is for casualty loss. But let me explain to you how that works, because even though you can deduct this loss, you probably won't be able to. What you're going to have to do is, let's say you told me that it was $4,500. So you have to subtract $100 right off the top of what you've got. So now all of a sudden your loss is $4,400. Then you've got to take 10% of your adjusted gross income for the year. So for 2012, if you and your husband earned $50,000, 10% of $50,000, and I'm making this number up, is $5,000. Now this bracelet wouldn't be deductible, because all she would have is a $4,400 loss. You'd have to be over $5,000. So it's got to be 10% over your adjusted gross income. So you can claim it, but most people don't get the deduction.
What kind of evil genius comes up with rules like this?
This, you know, it's just isn't it crazy?
It's
I sit there
nuts.
And I think about the laws, and this is it's just absolutely nuts.
Bonnie, are you going to keep wearing the expensive jewelry outside?
Well, I'm sort of campaigning to get another one, but we'll see.
All right, well, you tell your husband that we're 100% behind you, okay?
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Bonnie. All right, let's turn now to Michael. He's calling from Minneapolis. Hiya, Michael.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good. Minneapolis, chilly, right?
High 20s, pretty good for this time of year.
I'm sorry, you said high 20s. I'm in L.A. That sounds like, you know, the Great White North suddenly.
Well, your blood thickens up here or you don't survive.
What do you do?
I work for a healthcare company and their compliance organization.
Does that mean that you're in charge of making sure that they follow the rules?
We have a large team, and we make sure we follow every rule the government gives us.
And if I asked you straight out, how's our healthcare system? Good, bad, indifferent?
I think the quote is that America has the worst healthcare system in the world, except for every other healthcare system in the world.
I don't know if I go quite that far. But what can we help you with?
My former domestic partner and I purchased a home in 2007 as an investment. that he then decided to live in. It was in another state, a state where I never lived, never resided in the home. Fast forward 5 years, our relationship ended, and he sued me for my joint ownership of the property. It was held as joint tenants in common with right of survivorship. And I spoke with an attorney and learned that it would cost me probably in excess of $50,000-$60,000 to defend my ownership of the house. And I just decided to go ahead and sign a quitclaim deed. My attorney worked with his attorney. So my question is, can I deduct any part of my ownership of that house as a loss on my taxes?
Before I bring in Lewis, I got to ask. I mean, first your relationship goes south and then he sues you?
Yes.
Boy, that's a slap in the face, right?
Life lesson. You move forward.
Oh, but you're taking this far too well. I would be cheesed.
Oh, you know, I can only control how I react to it. And, you know, it's not going to dwell on it. Going to move forward, but just want to see, you know, how I can put the final dot on this and move forward.
You've got an incredibly healthy attitude about this. So, Lewis, I mean, here's a situation where these competing claims and you've got the legal costs, lots of moving parts.
No, there are more moving parts, David. And Michael, I'm sorry about what happened to you, but this is where I think you really are going to have to seek a professional, either a certified public accountant, a CPA, or enrolled agent who is a specialist in real estate, because there are a lot of moving parts. First of all, Michael said that he purchased this home and his domestic partner lived in the home, said it was his personal residence, but not Michael's personal residence. He didn't live in that state, right?
Correct.
And so what happens is now all of a sudden, well, it's not your personal residence. Is it a second home? Or is it an investment property? How did you declare it on your tax returns? You don't have to answer all these questions because we have so many questions. You're going to have to really seek counsel here. So now we've got the question is, again, is it an investment property? The other thing is that he quitclaim deed. So technically, David, he gifted this property back.
Exactly.
And so if you gifted, remember in 2012, the maximum gift you can give anyone per person is $13,000. I don't know how much you invested in this property, but if it were over $13,000, you now have to file a gift tax return, a Form 709. So it complicates it even further. You're talking about this crazy tax code that we have.
All right, but once we work through all of that stuff, Michael's core question is, can he claim it as a loss? Is that even in the zip code of possibility?
It's a gray area, but I'm going to say at this point right now, without just knowing the current facts, I would say no, and the reason for that is because he didn't fight it. He'd have to go back and treat it as an investment property. I'd have to go back and take a look at prior returns and see how he reported that property. If he had reported as an investment property, then we would have a fighting chance.
All right, Michael, I know you're in a happy place emotionally, but now financially, are you prepared to walk away from this mess and not be able to at least eke out a tax benefit from it?
Oh, absolutely.
So you're just kind of dipping your toe in the water. You just want to see what your possibilities are here.
Correct. And I want to make sure that I'm doing the right thing with the IRS.
All right. And thank you very much for your call. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Take care, guys.
Take care, Michael.
And from one Michael to another, let's turn to Michael calling from Birmingham. Hiya, Michael.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. So what do you do in Birmingham?
I am a geographic information technician.
Okay, let's dial back the videotape right there. You're a what?
Yeah, it's basically I install and update power companies' maps, I guess, via computer cartography. So basically a glorified cartographer.
So this is like the Apple mapping app, or is this something else?
Different software, but same ballpark.
But you're that guy. So basically every time I go into Google Maps or Yahoo Maps, somebody like you has gotten their fingerprints on it.
You got it.
You're not the guy giving us the wrong directions, right?
He's exactly the guy.
I hope not.
What can we help you with today?
Yes, my question is, with it being tax season, it made me wonder how the IRS came up with all the names for the tax documents needed, like the W-2, the 1099, and the 1040.
What a great question. I love those kind of questions.
Yeah, and in fact, I've always been curious about this because when I was younger and I first heard about 401ks, I thought that you were supposed to know or memorize over 400 tax documents, and needless to say, this worried me.
Heck, I don't even know what the K is doing there and why it's in parentheses, for goodness sakes.
I've never even heard anybody asking this question before, and I've been doing taxes for over 30 years. We started filing taxes in 1913, And during that time period, what happened, IRS came up with a system. So there's meaning to this madness. They came up with a system. They said, okay, all individual taxes or reporting of income taxes, we're going to name them in the like in the thousands. Anything having to do with employment, we'll number those that batches at 900s. So they started taking categories.
Why 900s?
Well, they just we started at, instead of starting with one, we started 1,000, the 900s. If we're going to do some estate planning, somebody said, let's pick the 700s.
What the heck?
And so from there, everything was just sequential from going on. So at one point, there was actually a tax form called 1039. So the next one came was a 1040, right? So that's it. That's just sequentially, that's how it happens. You have, for example, then you have schedules. It was the very first schedule where you itemize the deductions on your 1040, the very first schedule. So we can't even give it a number. That's a schedule. So what do we call it? Schedule A. And then we have to report dividends and interest. Let's call it Schedule B. So it's just a system they've created for specific categories. If you know that a form is an employer form, you're going to think it's got to be a 900 form, like a 940 or 941, a withholding form. A withholding schedule, you'll think, oh, maybe it'll start with a schedule, a W, a W-2.
Whatever happened to the W-1?
I don't know what happened to the W-1.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, but there was a W-1 at one point. And it wasn't even a W-1. It was probably just the W, right?
And
the second one was a W-2.
This is so
loony. So you have a W-2, right?
Right.
And that's just how it works. Now, Michael, what you're referring to when you talk about a 401k or a 403b or a pension plan, those numbers actually are from the Internal Revenue Code. So if you take a look at the volumes of the Internal Revenue Code and you go to section 400s, you're going to see the sections that have to do with pension law. So the 401, it'll be a defined contribution. Under the subsection K, you'll find out information on your 401k.
This is great. Michael, did we help bring you up to speed on this stuff?
You sure did. I've always been clueless on it and curious as well.
David, I think Michael's going to go out and buy the Internal Revenue Code. What do you think?
I hope so. Michael, thank you very much for your call. You know what, Lewis? This just got me thinking.
Yeah.
What we might want to do is reform the tax code in some way and make it simpler and easier to understand.
What, you think so? I mean, you're a genius.
It's
you're
like
a genius. You're
I know.
An absolute genius. Yeah.
I'm just spitballing right now, but it just seems like, you know what? It would make a lot of sense.
Well, you have a good grasp for the obvious. That's all I can say.
Well, you're not the first person to say that as well. Michael, thank you for calling. Lewis Barajas, always a pleasure to be talking taxes with you. Thank you so much for being here.
David, my pleasure always.
It's just a few weeks until tax time, which means a lot of us are now wading through receipts and paperwork. We'd like to hear your tax stories. Maybe you're a taxpayer who's taken a creative approach to filing. Maybe you're an accountant with some war stories to tell about a client or a joust with the IRS. Or maybe you're an auditor with a tale of life in the tax trenches. We'd like to hear from you. We're on Twitter at Radio Piggy Bank, on Facebook at marketplacemoney.org.